Daily Words of Wisdom.
On some days I needed them, so it was fascinating.
From an unexpected place.
I guess it became this huge mystery of who was riding in 250.
Plus,
I love the speed and the grace.
Defying gravity.
If I can do this, you know, it's kind of like an anything is possible mentality.
And expectations.
Lineman on the hill!
This week on Open Record.
Left and turn.
When inspiration comes. Sight unseen.
From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm Brian Polson, and I am joined this week by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hello.
And we are joined once again by Fox 6 Wake Up News anchor and feature writer extraordinaire, Carl Deffenbaugh. Hey, Carl.
Very kind.
Welcome back to the podcast. We are recording this episode on, what is it, Wednesday, March 13th, for release on Thursday, March 14th. It's almost the Ides of March.
Ooh.
If you don't already...
Day.
It, what's that?
314
is Pi Day. That's right. This will be released on Pi Day. Absolutely. 314. If you don't already know this, Carl is one of the best feature story writers in the business. And today we're going to talk about a couple of his most recent feature stories that have one thing in common. Inspiration that comes from a place where feeling matters more than seeing. And we're going to talk about that right after this. So, Carl, the first story we're going to talk about today comes from a local university campus. And when you told me about the story, we were talking a little bit about some of the techniques behind the scenes. But before the story was even finished, I said, this kind of reminds me a little bit of the movie Good Will Hunting. And that'll make sense here in a minute. Tell us about the blackboard mystery in Lubar Hall.
It certainly was running through my mind as well. I was trying to figure out how I could work a how about them apples or you're enough into the script. But yeah, this is maybe perhaps without the drama of Good Will Hunting, a Good Will literature, not math in this case. But there's this amazing...
He also doesn't beat anybody up.
Yeah,
so that's
right. All in all, there's a lot less drama in this story, thankfully, I think, for everyone involved. So this is a gentleman who works for UWM's custodial staff. He's a custodian on campus, works every day cleaning up rooms and hallways and things like that. He just also happens to be, I think, one of the more fascinating people I've come across in doing stories because of the way his mind works. And it is constant how it runs and all of the things that are in his head at any given moment. And he decided last semester to kind of start putting some of these on the board. And all of a sudden, in this one room in particular in the business school, although there's a lot of classes that go through their philosophy, others, these quotes would start to pop up on the chalkboard there. And they'd be from all kinds of different sources, whether it's famous writers like Oscar Wilde, people like Mother Teresa, maybe Spider-Man or other comic influences there. And these quotes would pop up on the board and the students seemed to just love them. And there was almost this back and forth as students would then leave notes for this anonymous, mysterious person.
But what I'm wondering is, they're seeing these quotes. Are they, I would assume if I'm a student, oh, the professor wrote
the
that at the start of the day as sort of an inspirational message. Did they ask and the professor said, that's not me, or what happened?
That's kind of how it snowballed, is no one knew where these quotes were coming from because they were just on the board. And then people throughout the day, because there'd be class after class in these rooms, would add to it. So if you were in an afternoon class, say, you'd see these different messages and have no idea what class it was beforehand that had maybe left these, or as it turned out, had not, because it was this mysterious custodian.
Well, and I think about, so the custodian... Their job is to clean and leave the room sparkling. And so when I do something and I clean something, you know, the second there's like a dirty dish or a dirty towel, I'm like, oh man, it's like tarnished, like all my cleaning. But this guy was like, no, I'm going to leave these messages. So he was cool with cleaning the room, leaving these inspirational messages, and having that be an impact for the kids that were coming in class then.
And it's one of the things that I kind of love about the story. We should say his name because it was a mystery.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Trey Velez.
Trey
Velez, this awesome guy in his 20s who is a product of MPS, grew up in Milwaukee, hopes to go to UWM and be a student there himself one day. But he also has really an artist's mind and background as well. He does some drawing and things like that. He has this beautiful handwriting too, which I thought really added to the visual side of the piece as well, because these quotes look like they're meant to be there. To your point, Sarah.
It's all straight. Like, I write on a chalkboard and I'm like,
my handwriting. Like, oh. I literally wrote a note to my wife the other day, and then I asked her to read it back to me over the phone because I had left it at home. And she goes, I'm just going to take a picture. but she couldn't decipher. So me on a chalkboard, it would be a disaster, but he had nice handwriting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that adds to it. And again, it kind of snowballed into this mystery over the course of the fall semester at UWM, not necessarily knowing where these were coming from, but a number of different people really moved by it, whether that was students or professors, those kind of those small gestures, those little acts of kindness that you don't expect, you don't look for, but just happen in your life. Really affected a lot of the people on campus.
Well, didn't you say some of it started with, like, you know, he was having a case of the Mondays, like, get in line, right? I mean, we all have that. So for him to be like, you know what, forget it, I'm just going to, you know, jot down a little message, and just how it snowballed.
So he ends up quoting people like Plato and Confucius and Victor Hugo and some of the biggest names in human history, right? And it started with one of his own where, as you say, he was having a case of the Mondays, and just he and his fellow custodian, his buddy, kind of thought it was funny. So he left something on the board for anyone else kind of feeling the same way. Basically, the weekend happens too fast, right? So his quote, dramatic as this may sound, was something to the effect of, "It sucks the Sunday is over, but hey, welcome to Monday." Kind of is what it is. Let's handle it all together.
This is his own quote. This was the filming of his quotes were pulled from these famous philosophers and literary, you know, the poets and things like that. These are his words.
Yeah. And I think it's because of that back and forth that he kept it going. He wouldn't necessarily have done that, but he started to, he'd go into the classroom the next morning to clean everything up, perhaps do a new quote, and there'd be a message back from a student saying, like, "Hope you have a nice day," or like, "Oh, thanks for this,
like,
I really liked
pal.
It honestly like it. It's like this mysterious
did he ever say why he chose this particular blackboard and didn't do it on like every blackboard in all the rooms? Like, why did 205 become the place for this?
So probably 250 actually, but
250 I'll hold you on that.
Probably for two different reasons. One of them kind of mundane. It was really the only class on his rotation that had a blackboard.
Okay.
So many are with whiteboards.
Yes. Yep.
And again, there's just kind of this tactile feel to the story and to writing something on a chalkboard versus a whiteboard. So it started with that, although he started to get requests then, "Hey, could you do one in this room?"
Yeah,
or leave one in this room. And then, sorry, second part of your question?
Well, no, that was really it. That was the, but what strikes me and what I love about this story, is sort of if you step back, is that it challenges some of our own sort of biases and assumptions. And I think the first one is when you say custodian, I hate to say it, I picture an old guy with balding hair and you know, the keys hanging off his thing going slowly down the hall. And yet this is a young guy and he's full of life. You know, I almost hate to say it that I picture someone going down the hall sort of defeated by life. And it's unfair, but I'm being honest that that was a picture that comes to my head. So he's such a surprise.
And again,
in
when
many
it's
ways.
This mystery, you kind of have that picture in your head of what's happening.
But
here,
on top of that, someone who's working custodial work, you don't necessarily expect, and maybe again, this is my own bias, but here I'm putting it out there, you don't expect that he's got all of these deep interests in literature and poetry and philosophy, and yet he is fascinated by those topics and obviously very interested in it.
I don't know about you, Brian, but do you have a favorite mythology?
I do,
because he has three. His favorite mythologies he listed are Mayan, Japanese, and Greek.
I heard that new story and I went, I feel highly, like, you know, not sufficient right now.
And he's the type of guy that will just strike up a conversation. It was so much fun working on this piece with Trey because he's so genuine. He's so authentic. We basically joined him for a morning well before class was in session. You know, he starts at 6 a.m. making his rounds. And I barely had to prompt him with questions, and he just kind of went going. He has all of these thoughts in his head, listens to a lot of audiobooks. He does a lot of his own thinking and writing as well. And it just kind of all came spilling out. And he spent his entire life reading. He credited his mom, who's a teacher, for that. She would always take him and his siblings to the library, pick out a book, rotate through. And he's read all of these different things already at this point in his life and just has this yearning for knowledge, thirst for knowledge that it can't be contained.
You spent the day with him as he went around kind of making his rounds and writing some of these things. What was that like? Tell me about the experience of just hanging out with Trey for the day.
It was so much fun because you just never knew where the conversation would go. He can take you in any different direction. He's interested by so many different facets of life. And he's just the type of guy that wants a story, wants to learn. This one classroom, a different one actually, was his favorite on campus, often where he takes his lunch break if possible, because it has this window to the campus outside. And I loved that image of him kind of coming up with a story through this window of the people walking by with no knowledge of this outside, and him kind of coming up with, okay, what's going on in their life? What's happening here? He's a fascinating guy, has all of these different interests, and then is genuinely just a person that will reach out. And I think that's kind of the point of the story is if you make that effort, people are there to accept it, to receive it, to want something like that. He would just randomly throw questions at myself and my photographer Tanner about our lives. Why were we in the careers that we wanted to pursue? How did this journey kind of take us to this point?
Therapy as you're going around on a story. Right. What I really think is so interesting here though is, and I'm grateful for this. This is the kind of story where you might have heard someone who was doing this and the students really liked it, but then maybe the school goes, "Hey, your job is to clean the blackboard. Right. Stop writing on that."
Yeah.
But they didn't respond that way. How did the school react when they found out about this and what happened next?
Yeah, instead, the reason we know about this story is because of the school. So there was a professor in particular that we interviewed, to your point about preconceived notions. He was the one to kind of bring this to light. He is one of the UWM professors who worked in this class. He's not a regular in that class, but happened to have one of his courses there. And he also was seeing these quotes left behind. And it wasn't necessarily, you know, not assuming that a custodian would be the one to leave this, but it was the interplay that threw him off, or threw him off the scent, if you will, for this hunt to solve the mystery. Because of the back and forth, he assumed it was a previous class. And then it started to drop off over the course of a semester as some of the hybrid learning took place. And there were more and more virtual classes as opposed to students in person, but the quotes would remain. So what was going on in these classes that an initial back and forth was now dropping off? He was friendly with the custodian that cleans these rooms, and then one day asked this guy, Trey, like, "Hey, do you know which class is leaving these?" And it's one of my favorite moments of the piece, because Trey basically just like laughs and says, "Yeah, man, it's me." Like,
no one had ever asked him.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So he wasn't hiding this necessarily, just no one asked him who's doing this. And they're thinking, maybe you've seen someone out here. Did you walk in on somebody writing these?
And the professor, to the point about, you know, the ramifications of even the smallest gestures, would send some pictures of these to his colleagues, to his friends, kind of pay it forward, like, "Hey, this one really hit me today. Maybe you need this in your life. Maybe you're going through something where this will really hit." That went from there. The chancellor ends up learning about this, and they actually honored Trey after that semester, I believe back in January, with a plaque, with also a book with 1,000 new quotes.
I love the book because he takes it with him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's like he's pushing around his custodial cart, and there's the book quotes.
And to your point, it's someone who upholds the university's values. That's the type of person they want working in any capacity on campus.
Well, and your whole point about in this day and age, everyone is phones like this, in their computers, in their digital life, that we don't do a lot of this necessarily. And so for the connection that Trey was able to make with the students, with the staff, with the university, like it's beyond than just the messages.
And again, I said it that he is genuine. That was my favorite part about this story. It's genuine and authentic because, again, it just kind of starts with a case of the Mondays, grows from there and turns into this thing that so many people were moved by.
Now, when I hear this, he's working, doing this custodial work for the university, but he's got all of these interests. You said he's in his 20s. Yeah. It makes me wonder about his own educational aspirations. Did he talk about sort of where he sees himself going and is school a part of that?
Yeah, he has plenty, certainly. And again, with that much knowledge in his head, I'm really excited to see where he takes this. But he is taking online classes through MATC right now while he works, and he's fully intending to become a student at UWM, like those students he was leaving the messages for. Maybe you would think philosophy, maybe writing, given how much he kind of does on his own or his interest, but he actually wants to go into psychology.
I
love the message behind it. He wants to help people, as he did through that whole fall semester. He wants to help people.
What a great story to tell as how he got to where he is. I would love the story, Carl. When it comes to inspiration, though, from things you cannot see, the next story takes us to whole new heights. Imagine sliding down a mountain in the pitch dark, on purpose. Well, we're going to talk about that right after the break. All right, so for this next story, Carl, you spent some time on the slopes. Not the worst assignment to
have. I didn't hate a couple of Sunday nights on the mountain, I'll say that.
What prompted you to go to Sunburst to do this story? I mean, we'd all love to go skiing. Obviously, it wasn't the greatest winter for skiing, by the way, because it was a pretty warm winter. But you got the right time, you got the right weather. What took you to the slopes?
It's a story that I've been interested in for a year or two at this point when I first learned about this program. But there's an organization called BOLD, which is Blind Outdoor Leisure Development, that runs a number of different programs and activities for people who are visually impaired. Maybe you're fully blind, maybe you have limited sight. And basically their role, their goal is to open the world to the visually impaired, that there should not be limitations. And that includes the activity that got Bold started 50 years ago, skiing. They've now expanded, and we'll talk about that, to all kinds of different outdoor leisure activities. But it began with skiing. And to me, I am a skier. I go try to go once a year with a group of friends out west somewhere. We do big ski trips, things like that, though I'm not the best skier in the world, which I think you might be asking about in a little bit when it comes to the actual physical filming of this story. But I'm good enough where I can understand it, but I certainly can't comprehend doing it blindfolded or with my eyes closed. I would be terrified of doing that. So the concept that this is a regular thing that's been going on for decades just fascinated me when I learned about it. Then to your point, winters in Wisconsin, you kind of need certain conditions to film a story like this, and finally it came together this year.
So, you know, obviously people who are blind or have limited sight, they don't just go wake up one day and go, yeah, I want to ski. But they do want to do things that their friends are talking about. And it's more of a life thing than just like a goal to want to ski.
And I think that's where so many of us, whether you're visually impaired or not, can take something away from this story. If you want to do something, there are challenges. You will have to overcome stuff, but it doesn't mean that it's impossible. And case in point, imagine skiing blind. When you think about that, the first chance it probably sounds impossible, but clearly it's not.
Well, for anyone who has to do, because skiing itself is not an easy thing to learn. And I mean, for many people, the idea of falling, the idea of sort of motion that is out of control, balance, it's hard enough when you're looking and trying to keep your bearings about you. But to imagine doing that, now close your eyes and fall and keep your balance and slip down a mountain, it's terrifying.
I think about it, again, I'm not the best skier in the world, but even just little shadows as I'm going down the mountain, if I don't see a bump in the snow quite right because of a tree or because of a shadow again, or it's cloudy, all of a sudden I'm wobbly and falling off.
So how do they do it then?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question.
Yeah, so like, how are they doing it?
So lots of time and practice. It certainly takes lots and lots and lots of work. We featured two people in this story who are VIPs, as they call them, visually impaired people with Bold. One of them, Amelia King, has been doing this for not quite 10 years. Probably spent about 3 years on the bunny slopes, honestly, before she was able to get onto the bigger slopes. So it's a lot of time and work, but to her point, she was enjoying it, so it didn't feel like that work. The other gentleman, Dan Lococo, has been skiing now for like 35 years, has better technique than me, looks more competent on the mountain than I do, certainly. And all of it is the tandem with your guide. And if people
so
have
they're
ever,
not skiing solo.
Right, they're not
yes, so it's a partnership. It's the participant, the VIP, and the guide. And basically the guide follows behind.
And the guide is with Bold.
With Bold, yes. They're volunteers with the organization. They're not tethered at all. You might be used to seeing like sometimes when young kids learn skiing, there's a little harness that they'll use. That's not the case. Completely untethered on their own. But the guide is following, almost like mirroring them down the mountain.
So the guide is behind and the VIP is in front.
Yes. And then it's, instead of a physical tether, it's a verbal communication back and forth.
Right and turn!
There's very specific commands that they're trained to use. Left and turn, right and turn. And every part of that audio cue is important for the blind skier because, okay, the direction left and right makes sense. And is when the skier then gives a visual communication back to the guide. Again, a two-way street. And they'll put out a right or left pole so the guide knows whether or not the skier heard them properly, is doing what they want them to do, and then how long you hold that out and turn or holding out turn tells the blind skier how long to do that move for before you get back. And again, all of that is happening.
Yeah, that's not like a, it's not like a 3 minute production. It's within seconds that this is all happening.
Well, what struck me is as I'm watching the video, now you guys are on a hill that at the time was not particularly populated. So there's room for some of that. I guess there'd be room for error, so to speak. But I think of skiing and how many times, I'm also a skier, and how many times you have to make a quick decision because someone else was not paying attention and they've cut in front of you, there's an obstacle you didn't see, and you've got to make a quick. So that communication, I would imagine, has to happen quickly, and that's part of, I'm guessing, the practice over time is being able to do that and have the reaction in time. Is that right?
There's a great partnership with Sunburst, which you mentioned, Ski Hill out in Keewaskum. First of all, they give basically free lift tickets to the visually impaired and then discounts for the guides as well. So they handle a lot of the cost, which is another issue with skiing, obviously not the cheapest sport to get into or activity. And then they do this specifically on Sunday nights when there's, first of all, less traffic on the hills to begin with. And then the guides also, I will say, maybe wait for the snowboarders to go down, wait for a clearer spot on the mountain, and
give
then
it a, give it a beat.
Work part of the training.
Well, and these volunteers, these people that are the trainers, is that what we're calling
guides,
them?
Sorry,
guys. Why am I not thinking that word? But the guides, they didn't just come into Bold and then go, all right, we're going to go down the hill and I'm going to teach these people that
they've got to learn how to do this.
They have to learn how to do it. So that's the
number
interesting
one thing
too.
Is trust. And it was one of my favorite things because for most of the people watching the story, certainly we have our sight. We have that vision. So a guide will practice skiing blindfold. It's part of what they have to do to then eventually go down the hill with a VIP. And one of the guys that we featured is the guy who leads the ski program, Jim Froig. He's been doing this for years and years. He's a fantastic skier. He says each and every time he does it blindfolded, terrifying. Panic every time. Your senses go wacky because it's not what
you've adapted to a way of doing it that does include visual cues.
And the interesting part of that about that to me is they're not skiing blindfold during that guide training for the purposes of learning how to ski blind. That's not the goal. They're going to be with their vision while they lead the VIPs down. The sole purpose is to understand the trust, to have an understanding of how much trust the VIP, the blind person, is putting in you, basically their life going down the mountain, so that you fully understand that and have an understanding and awareness of what they're experiencing as you're guiding them down the mountain.
Now, I want to talk about the logistics of doing the story, because as you have such great visuals, it's a great activity for a television news story, because the irony of saying visuals here, but the gliding through the snow, you've got this beautiful setting. But you have participants who can't see what you're doing, and you've got to actually ski down the hill with them. And I don't know, who was the photojournalist you worked with?
Jeff Rings, one of our retros.
How did you logistically get the video you needed for this story?
So it was kind of a combo of relying on better and better skiers. So Jeff shot a lot of the stuff on the base of the mountain. I tried to do some of the stuff with a smaller camera on a little monopod following along. I mentioned we usually go on a ski trip once a year. We did not this year, so this is my first time skiing since last
Brush
winter.
Off the dust.
Kind of wish I had a little bit more of a practice beforehand. So I would follow along behind the pairs, the tandem of guide and VIP. And then we also tried to work out something where the guide would carry down a GoPro a couple times to get closer, get more of the better sound and everything. Because, you want to take the viewer to the experience. So trying to get as close as you can. For me, not too close, so I don't take out these people I'm trying to feature on a story.
Sorry.
And then maybe a funny story you'll appreciate, Brian. One of them, I got a little too locked in to really getting that great tight shot, was feeling good on the skis. And a couple of the people with Bold who were learning how to guide, so they were following down the other pair, just started saying to me, hey, guy, basically. And I look up and there's a metal pole at the base of the mountain that was blocking
off. Headed right
that I was going straight towards as I'm turned around trying to get this great shot of the guy in VIP. So they basically saved me as well.
I just want to know, when you interviewed, you said these two participants who've done it, one for 10 years, one for 30 something years. What did you get from them in terms of how important this activity is for them? Because I'm sure there are still some things that, no matter what kind of organizations are out there, some things you just can't do, some things that are always going to be out of reach. Skiing might have seemed like one of them, but here they are doing this, and doing this for years of their life. How important is it for them?
It's empowering. It's everything to them in many ways. The one woman we spoke to, Amelia King, Sarah alluded to this, but she spoke to having conversations with your friends. If they're talking about a vacation, if they're talking about an experience, you don't want to feel separate from that. You don't want to feel like you're on an island. And for her, she had a great line about she can be part of that story too, because of Bold, because of the experiences she's had through this organization. Her life doesn't have to be limited by her lack of sight, because she's able to have these same experiences, share in those moments with her friends. And then for Dan, it was really interesting. He really stressed the partnership again, what it means to do this with someone. Not that he's accomplishing this and doing this, but he's doing it with a guide, and that symbiotic relationship, that partnership, is just so important and so vital to him.
Well, I think about just the sensation of going downhill. It's one of the reasons I love skiing. Mm-hmm. But so much of it is about the feel of the snow under your skis, that crunch, that you know, if you get a nice turn, the softness. I've got to imagine that's magnified when you don't have the visual cues as well. You're really focused on that feel. It must be an incredible experience.
Another point that he made that I don't think made it into the piece, but I thought was really interesting. If you're visually impaired, if you're blind as he is, snow is scary in most situations. Winter in Wisconsin, slushy streets, icy sidewalks, managing his everyday life because of snow and winter can really hinder it. And on a mountain, it's that nice snow, right? Yeah. Snow is a perk. Snow is a benefit. And kind of shifting the mindset of how you view winter, I think, has been really beneficial to him over the years. And that's an outlet for him where he doesn't have to be worried and concerned in that way. And just in general, I think what really struck me about this piece again is this opens the world to them. This can open the world to anyone. If you watch these people do this, and you would never know unless you were watching that guide and hearing some of the commands, what can't you do? You can do anything as long as you have that dedication, if you put that time and effort into it.
Now, you said early on in this that this is an organization called BOLD. We are going to talk a little bit more about it because skiing is just one of the things that they help people who are visually impaired to do. And when we come back, we're going to find out how BOLD started, all the other ways it's helping visually impaired people and legally blind in Wisconsin to enjoy outdoor leisure. We will be joined by Ray Tweedle, president of Southeastern Wisconsin BOLD, right after this. All right, as I mentioned, BOLD has been around for a long time in the Milwaukee area. And the president of BOLD joins us now over Zoom, Ray Tweedle. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us, Ray. I said Tweedle, is that right?
Thank you.
Ray Tweedle, thank you for being here. Tell us about BOLD. What is it? Remind us, Carl told us what the acronym stands for, but what is it and what other things do you offer beyond skiing?
So BOLD is open to all legally blind people. And most importantly, we like to stress this, is that everything we offer is free. We provide transportation. We pay for the events. You just talked about skiing. We cover all that. We cover all those costs. We generally have, meals during the period that we're having our events. So I said, this is all done by lines of Southeast Wisconsin, essentially from the Illinois line all the way up to just south of Sheboygan and like halfway to Madison, pretty much picture that this Southeast corner of the state. So these are all lines providing the funding, for these activities that we do. We are year round service. And we, I think we're going to get into, you want to kind of hear more about all the activities that we do.
I was just going to say, I'm looking at this list, and I know we're concentrating on skiing right now. This list isn't just things that are just on the ground, just walking from one place to another. We're talking about ice skating, bowling, zip lining, motorcycle rides. Like what can you go into some of these other activities too?
Well, actually, yeah, I can talk about the motorcycle ride in particular. We're my Lions Club, Richfield Lions Club, actually hosts that event and kind of spearheads it in collaboration with BOLD, and not officially A-Bait and HOG, but we work with those groups to get bikes to actually do this. And I'd like to tell an interesting story. You guys did a good job nailing it. You understand, Carl, I think you really pulled out all of your conversations with us of what we're all about, how the interaction of the blind with their guide, that trust that everybody has to have. And the fact that one of the reasons we're out here is we like to do things in public, so people actually see us, and they're like, "Wow, that guy just skied by me. It says blind on the back of his safety vest. Is he really blind?" And yes, we are out there. We're doing these things. So the motorcycle ride, I want to tell one quick story. Hopefully, we have time for it. I'll never forget the first year we did this was 2001. And we didn't know how it was going to go. We pulled this together, shoestring. We got the busload of VIPs to the bar. It was our meeting place.
It's Wisconsin. Of course you're meeting at the bar.
So pizza later. But so they left on the ride, and I went home. I lived 3 miles away from there. You know, they were going to be back at 3 o'clock. I came back a little early. They all came in, and we got them into the bar. We had pizza and beer ready to go, just like anybody else would do. You know, we all go out, and we have pizza and beer. And so I was kind of curious to go over to the VIPs and hear what they thought about this event. And, of course, they were all bubbly. And do you remember that part where we obviously went through America's Dairyland? You know, we went by a farm that was just cleaning out the pens, as it were. Or do you remember that spot where we're that mile stretch where we could smell lilacs, things like that? And, you know, so that was natural for me to hear that from them. Then I went over by the bikers. They were doubly excited. They were already talking about next year. That's awesome. Like, boom, this is a hit. 24 years later, give or take 2 years because of COVID, you know, we're still going strong with that. And it's these bikers that we have come, I mean, they have enriched their lives so much that, you know, when they go on rides, so they're, you know, they're sitting back and they're cruising. And, you know, they're feeling the rumble underneath their...
Okay, you answered a question underneath. For me. You answered an important question because the skiing, the VIP is leading the way and there's a guide behind them. The motorcycle ride, they're on the back, right? They're not, you know, powering the motorcycle because that seems impossible.
And some of them, you know, they have the headsets between the helmets. So the VIP is relaying, oh, we're going by a barnyard now. Or, do you smell the lilacs? Do you smell the swamp? Do you smell, oh, we're on fresh asphalt now? I mean, like I said, the bikers now, when they're gone on their rides, they're not just looking at things. Yep. They're taking it all in.
Well, and that, so I'm not
that's
only
one of the coolest things about our program is to see sighted people enrich their lives because of what of working with us.
Well, that's a great point because I also am a motorcycle rider. And when you go on rides, actually, it is sometimes the sounds, the smells, the things that really tell you more about an environment that we drive past all the time and we completely ignore because our windows are closed in the car. When you're out and experiencing that, it's a very different experience seeing the landscape, the beautiful landscape of the state of Wisconsin, but to smell and to hear it as well. Obviously, those are senses that are very important when you are riding as a VIP on the back of a motorcycle and otherwise could never experience.
Brian, June 1st is our ride. We'd love to have you.
There you go.
Hey, it sounds like I've got a plan. That sounds fantastic. I want to ask a little bit about how the organization started because this goes actually, if I understand correctly, this did start as a skiing organization back in Aspen, Colorado in the late 1960s. But very shortly thereafter, the Milwaukee chapter was founded by a gentleman from Port Washington and his name, it was a Dick Cap. Is that right?
That's correct. He was actually district governor for our district.
District governor for the Lions Club here in this part of Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yes, yes. So essentially, this is 1973. He was a skier himself. He was out in Aspen, Colorado. And there was a Frenchman that, I don't know if he lived there or if he just occasioned there, why he would come here versus skiing in the Alps, I don't know. So I'm assuming he lived here. But he was struck blind. And being an avid skier, he wanted to keep it up. So they worked it out. You know, so you've learned about that, how, you know, there actually are two methods. There's one method where the guide will follow. And that's generally when you're totally blind and they're giving the directions. The other one is where we call them VIP partials, where they can actually follow the guide. So that is another method.
But anyway, limited sight, but not full sight.
Yeah. We call them partials. You know, they can see the shadow or they can see enough that they can actually just follow. And we do the same thing in our social events where, okay, you don't need as much skill as when you're guiding for skiing or such, but there's still some technique, but back to the story of our beginning. So Jean Aimer was this gentleman's name. And I said, they figured out, they got the Lions Club and they formed what was called Aspen Bold back then. Dick Cap was out there, saw this going on. And of course, Lions we're mostly about vision. That's how we got started back in 1917. And I'll do a little bit more history. 1924, we actually had an international convention. Canada came on board with Lions, which was started in Chicago by Melvin Jones. And they invited Helen Keller to come to the convention, and she asked us to be her Knights of the Blind. And from that point on, everything about vision became our main mantra. So having that within himself, Dick Cap, he brought that back here. And that winter of, if you go on our website, it kind of talks about they cautiously, hesitantly, whatever word they use, we had five VIPs at the time that were willing to ski, and they took them, I think it was Little Switzerland, but they went and did this, and it obviously was successful, and here we are 50 years later.
I loved also learning about it, too, because it's all age ranges, too. So the two people we featured in the piece happen to be adults, but Jim, the program director, was telling me it starts as young as 9 or 10-year-olds they've had out there, and I'd be curious about that perspective as well, hearing what it means to the parents to be able to see their child have this world open to them, have the experiences that other kids have that maybe they didn't think their child would.
Yeah, we actually, while you were there, we have a 9-year-old that's currently training. We have a 23-year-old and a 43-year-old that are, you know, they're being trained. I'm picturing we do our own promotional videos, of course, but I'm picturing a promo video we did a couple years ago, and Liz is the daughter of Kathy, and I'm gonna start crying, but it's just you hear Liz coming down the hill screaming in delight because it was her first time down on her own, and Kathy the mother is just so appreciative that this is all even able to happen, and it's we have some parent, we actually have a parent VIP son up in Sheboygan. They're technically out of our district, but we invited them in because they're willing to drive themselves. We had a swim thing out at Country Springs at the water park out there on Sunday, and they came down for that. And he actually ice skates down in Mundelein, Illinois, I think, as part of a program down there. So the parents, it's a great thing because there aren't that many, you know, to get kids involved with other kids that are blind. You know, a certain school may have one, two at the most blind or visually impaired students. So it's hard to get them involved with other students to experience the same thing. And that's where our program really helps out with that.
Right.
We cover such a wide area.
We are running a little short on time, but I want to make sure we have time to get two quick things in. And one of them is we talked about with the skiers, the guides are critical. And with so many of these things, you need guides, you need volunteers. Can you talk right now a little bit about the need you have for guides and volunteers and how people can get involved to help out?
We are growing. People are, they're no longer in disbelief because the word is really getting out there that, yes, we are totally free. Yes, we do go sailing. We do go bowling. We do have cross-country downhill skiing. So with that growth and with the large area that we cover here in southeastern Wisconsin, so we have Lions all over this area, which is great, and that's why we're forming. So we're getting proactive in making them more aware that we are experiencing this growth. We need guides that are, you know, all over this corner. So if we have an event in Waukesha and we have people in Racine, we just got a brand new one in Burlington. So we need people, and we have a bunch in Kenosha, so we need people that are in that area to kind of drive up and pick people, you know, on the way and go to this event. Post-COVID, transportation costs went up, and I'm not exaggerating, 55%. So we have developed a program where we have Lions or just you know, family members of our VIPs to help us do transporting and to do the guiding.
To your point, though, Brian, if there's an activity you're into, motorcycle riding, skiing, there's a really good chance the Bold has that program. So that's a chance for you to volunteer in something you already love and also help out people along the way.
Right. The last thing I want to ask then is for people who might want to take advantage of some of these things, people who are listening to this podcast, who are visually impaired and don't yet know about Bold, how can they get a hold of you and become a part of this?
Okay, we are wisconsinbold.com. That is our website. And there is a Join Bold link. And it's a forum that is ARIA compliant, i.e. your screen reader should be able to read it and get you through it. We have no requirements other than you give us your information. There are no fees, no membership fees. And again, transportation is included. Event fees are all covered. And, you know, get on there, sign up. Same thing for anybody that wishes to help us transport or guide. There's a contact page where you can offer what you'd like to do, or if you want to learn more information, that's on there as well. And I said, our newsletter is on there. You can see our list of activities that we have coming up. We have a new quarter coming up, so that'll be coming out in the next week. You'll find something you like, as Carl just said, and you want to be a part of this and have a more enhanced experience, come on down. We'd love to have you.
All right, Ray. I mean, it's free, but it is a priceless experience for so many people. Thank you for taking the time to join us here on Open Record.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right. We are going to take a break. We're going to go off the record when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we absolutely have done no preparation because we don't know what Sarah's about to ask
ever.
Us.
Excellent.
What do you have, Sarah?
Ever. Okay. So at the beginning of this podcast, we talked about Good Will Hunting.
I was going to do movie quotes because
no,
I can do movie
not
quotes.
Movie quotes. We don't have that much time. I admittingly have never seen that movie.
What?
Which brings us to my question.
Record scratch, Dave.
What movies do you feel like everyone has seen, but you haven't, and you're embarrassed to admit? And I will start with a story really quick. So later this month, I'm going out to Los Angeles for some training for work. And the first thing my husband asked me was, oh, is the training in Nakatomi Plaza? And here's me. Google.
It's a Christmas movie. It's Christmas.
And,
it's Christmas
and movie. I have never seen Die Hard.
How? Same.
Okay.
No, that's me.
So,
wait.
Yeah.
I can give Sarah a pass. That's it's a dude's movie.
But every year, everyone's like, it's a Christmas movie. And I'm like, I never pipe up because I don't know.
It also set the standard for like decades of action films.
I don't watch action films.
The thing is, like, do you have to feel ashamed? I'm not ashamed that I haven't seen it. I just haven't seen it.
But the reaction.
You said embarrassed.
I'm not embarrassed either.
But the reaction is always, oh, you haven't, which makes me feel shame.
So the reaction is based upon the fact that it is such a part of the cultural lexicon that you go, wow, you don't know what
I
we
want
all
you
know.
To have the thrill
we want
of watching
have.
That movie.
It's
I
not
wish
not
I could
going
go
to
back.
Before I go.
It's not a judgment. It's pity.
No, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
There are so many movies from, you know, decades ago that maybe don't hold up in terms of pacing, things like that. That Fair. Movie flies. That movie's fantastic to
okay,
this day.
Okay.
Now, I will tell you that this I actually resolved this one over the weekend. So I was born in 1972, and I want to say Animal House came out in the early 80s, early to mid 80s. I was in Animal House was not an appropriate movie
Absolutely
for a 12 year old or whatever,
well,
whenever it came out.
I mean, yeah.
But I grew up around the time when everyone was quoting Animal House, and I know the I'm a zit, get it. Yeah. I knew most of the sort of iconic toga. Uh-huh. We all know that.
Yes.
But it's one thing when you know scenes that everybody talks about.
Right.
So you convince yourself you've seen
but you actually have never
and
seen
it. I was
film.
Flipping through Netflix or wherever this was recently, whatever streaming service it was on, and I saw Animal House and I was like, oh, it would be fun to watch that again because I had convinced myself that I'd seen Animal House.
I've never seen this.
And then as we're watching the beginning of the movie, I was like, I haven't seen any of this. And by the way, that's Marion from Indiana Jones.
We just did that with Adventures in Babysitting. I had never seen it, but I quoted a lot. Make sense.
By the way, also, yes, one of the other guys, one of the lead characters in the movie, I then recognize is Alan Stanwyck from Fletch, which may not mean anything to you because I don't know. Do you like Fletch?
I probably never seen it.
Okay, so Fletch is a movie I'll quote endlessly. My wife, she hates it because I quote it endlessly. But I'm watching Animal House and realizing all of these actors. Kevin Bacon has a part in it. There are so many actors that went on to great things. So it was a lot of fun to watch it all these years later. There are some things that don't really hold up to cultural
there's lots
norms
that
today that you couldn't put in a movie now.
To that point, movies that I had seen but had forgotten, we thought Grease would be really fun to watch with our girls recently who... For reference, are 5 and 2, and great music. So fun. I remember countless high schools doing productions of this over the years, including my friends growing up. That movie has some topics that I did not remember. Yeah. Even like Grease Lightning is a song that I did not get the references being made at the time.
There's a lot. Although actually that's true of, and I think this is intentional, that's true of a lot of the animated movies now. There are references that are meant for us and that get past our kids, and that our kids are one day going to go, oh, I didn't get what they were trying to say. And one of the first times I remember seeing that in one of these movies was Madagascar. Okay. And Chris Rock does the voice of the zebra.
Yeah.
And he said, and he does a what the? And, but as kids, you just think it's what the?
Right.
You don't know what he's about to say and what he's holding back from saying. And as an adult, I was like, oh, okay, this is for us.
That was even Puss in Boots, the most recent Puss in Boots. There was a part where I think it was the cat or whatever, was doing something and it started bleeping. And I'm watching in the theater going, oh my gosh, I was taken aback. But it was funny for me, but my kids were like, what?
So my answer, speaking of things that are not appropriate for network TV and things, maybe a little bit off the beaten path, but Boogie Nights is this iconic movie for a number of different reasons. The director, obviously Mark Wahlberg, what he goes on to. And I'd like to think of myself as actually a pretty big movie buff. I've seen like most of those big ones, and that one's still a hole for me. I still need to go back.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I've heard.
I've definitely seen that one.
Okay. You probably heard about the ending.
Actually, no.
No? Okay, well, we're not... Anyway.
Another one where
you'll see Mark Wahlberg in a whole new light.
Usual Suspects, that's another one where I've
never
think
seen that one.
Oh,
ending,
good.
Love
good
that
one. Movie.
The ending, right? We won't get into it. I've never seen it, so I have an idea, but I need to get back
you've never
to
seen
it?
No. Okay, worth it.
Yeah.
Well, my actual movie that I'm embarrassed I didn't see and still need to is The Goonies. only
got her.
Because of the link between Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And if you're not familiar with that, the three characters wear three different outfits that Dennis Nedry in Jurassic Park pretty much wears the same exact outfit.
And there's the Spielberg connection then too. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know what my takeaway is from Goonies? I think it was Goonies. Was Goonies? No.
Goonies
I'm not thinking of Goonies. No, what's the one that's not with Wilford Brimley, right? What's the one with Wilford Brimley where they have
the
fountain
like
of
Josh
youth?
Brolin.
Kids that went on. What's the movie that I'm thinking of where the Fountain of Youth and the old guys jump in the pool and Wilford Brimley is supposed to be playing this old grandpa and he's 49 years old when they shot the movie.
Oh, bless.
Why I'm blanking. Somebody's going to watch this. Yeah. Everyone's going to scream at their TV or their phone or whatever it is. Do you know what I'm talking about?
We need
about?
Our research staff on this.
I know.
I can't believe I can't think of it. Well,
all
maybe
I can think
we'll
about
back.
Is the diabetes commercial. But
but anyway, I saw that, and I am older than Wilford Brimley was when they filmed that movie, and it drives me crazy when I think about that.
That was a good question, Sarah.
That was like a great question.
You know? Everyone has one, too, all right?
Yeah.
We got to take a break. We'll wrap things up when we come right back. All right, so before we go here, it was Cocoon. I was thinking of Cocoon, not Goonies. Totally
Google.
Confused thing. Well, anyway, if you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this possible. Carl, thank you.
You're welcome.
Sarah,
thank you
for
having always. Me.
To our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.